Hello, and welcome to The Real Short Box. My name is Kevin.
I'm Donald.
I'm Jarrett. Deal with it.
And deal with it we shall, because we have another comic book history episode we're doing today.
Right. Yes. So get your monocles out and your long cigarettes that attach to other cigarettes. And
I prefer a pipe.
Or a pipe. You know, get a pipe and one of those
fill it with
Sherlock
crack.
Holmes hats and fill it with crack, because you're going to buckle the fuck up for this one, Kevin.
Indeed. Because we are doing the history of Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah. I love that.
A real dark horse in the industry.
Yeah, totally.
And they have a really cool company logo.
That they do.
Yeah.
It does confuse me a little bit with the Knight Rider.
It's a beautiful little pony.
Yeah.
Little pony.
It's for all the bronies out there.
Yeah.
All the people who are really into those. Oh, no, that's what my little pony.
Hey, I thought you told me you go to those conventions every year.
Go to them. I started them.
What? Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got Twilight Sparkle tattooed on my chest. Moonlight somebody on my ball. Never mind.
Starbright. Gem in the holograms.
Yeah, gem in the holograms on my butt sack.
On the penis.
Yeah.
But
you said my butt sack. My butt sack, which is almost like my ball sack, but it's a sack that contains my ass.
That's disgusting.
But
what's with the R-rated language? There's kids listening to this.
Oh.
Kids, get ready for the history of Dark Horse.
Yes. With butt sex.
Hold on to your butt sex.
Did you say sex or sex? It's hard to hear.
Well, the precursor to Dark Horse Comics started around 1980 with Mike Richardson, who was a freelance artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, hey, you know what? I want to do this. I want to pursue my passion. So he used a credit card to open up his first comic book shop called Pegasus Books.
So kids, use your credit cards. Take your parents' credit cards and use them for the things you love.
That's right. And then later on, it would become Things from Another World, which would become a retail shop, which would be opened up in three states. And of course, as you know, there is a Things from Another World shop at Universal.
City Walk.
That's right.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I'll be damned.
Yes.
Who knew?
Yes. So for about 5 to 6 years, he began to have success with his comic shops. And he learned some very disturbing information from comic book artists who would come in, you know, for signings and whatnot that we're all familiar with. They told him, you know, they had complaints about, you know, creator rights and, you know, you create something, you don't get to really benefit from it.
Right.
So he was disturbed by this and he said, you know what? This isn't right. We need to have some creator owned, you know, a company that gives creators power and control over their rights. Kind of similar to what Eclipse did and what Image would do later on. In 1986, Mike Richardson started Dark Horse Comics.
86, wow, okay.
Yes, it launched with Dark Horse Comics Presents, a black and white anthology. And also, it had in the book, you had Paul Chadwick's Concrete.
Yep, one of the original stories. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
God, I wonder how much that book is. If you could even find that thing.
It's free.
Really?
Yeah. All you have to do is go find Chadwick, and recite a secret password, and he'll give you a free copy of this first issue.
And murder one person of his choosing.
Yeah,
it's all yours. Free books.
Always his mother-in-law.
Free comic.
I don't know why. It's very odd.
Aw.
And then Dark Horse also created one of their first famous heroes called The Mask, which debuted in Dark Horse Presents number 10.
Wait. Somebody stop me here. Get it.
I get it.
Okay.
You guys, let's just get back to the storytelling, because it's showtime!
Yes, 30 years ago, September 1987, Dark Horse Presents number 10, The Mask. Mild-mannered Stanley Ipkiss buys a bizarre ancient mask and gains Looney Tunes-inspired superpowers, which are used to a violently comedic effect.
Chuck Avery.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, of the... Yeah, Looney Tunes. Yeah.
You know...
Guys, fans of the movie?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
First movie.
If they ever redo it or reboot it, I don't know who can really surpass Jim Carrey's performance.
Oh.
He's like the perfect person to play that character.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, it's definitely not Jamie Kennedy.
That's... Sorry. What was it? It was like the son of the mask?
Sorry, Jamie. Yeah.
Oh, man. Was that like a straight to DVD or?
Yeah, I think so.
A straight to nobody?
Right. If it did come out in theaters. Straight to
nobody's DVD player?
If it did come out in theaters, it was for like a day.
Yeah, I think that was a straight to nobody's DVD player. Nobody played that one, right? Yeah,
my mom watched it.
Aw. She's like, honey, this comic book stuff is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, there's a baby in it. Okay, Mom.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, later in the 1980s, Dark Horse did something very interesting. They decided to get the licensing rights to Aliens to put into comic book form.
Mm.
And basically, what they decided to do was basically continue the story.
Yeah, and Dark Horse would go on to do that for a lot.
That was like their bread and butter, right?
Yes. Aliens,
and
in fact,
Predator, right. Alien versus Predator, Star Wars.
Star Wars was their big acquisition, yeah. And they recently lost that. Sorry, Dark Horse, because Marvel and Disney. But some of the notable licensed properties that Dark Horse does or has had would be Star Wars, Avatar: The Last Airbender, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Of course, you said Aliens,
mm-hmm.
Conan the Barbarian, Conan, the Conqueror, mm-hmm. all those. Predator, of course, Mass Effect.
The video game, that's right.
Dragon Age, and most recently, I would say, would be Firefly.
Was it their idea, Dark Horse's idea, to do Aliens versus Predator?
I believe so.
Yes.
I believe so.
Yeah. It kind of was, because they did a comic, I believe, of Aliens versus Predator. Before the movie.
Oh, way before the movie. Yeah. Like 20 years before.
Now, the hell did this fledgling company get... I mean, I guess because probably nobody was asking at that time.
Right.
Aliens comic.
Hey. Nobody was asking for a lot of...
Asking, you shall receive.
I mean, Marvel was doing it. I mean, we all have bought and read the Meteor Man comic that came out.
Can't get enough of that shit.
But, nobody was really... At that point, it wasn't that profitable.
Right.
So nobody was doing it. And nobody thought that they could... They were just doing the story adaptation of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't doing a continuation.
Although Marvel, with Star Wars, though, they had Star Wars back in the day, remember?
Yes, they did.
And then that ran out, that license ran out, and Dark Horse...
They picked it up.
What
Dark Horse did, they decided to take it... like I said, they started creating more original stories.
Oh, they evolved on it.
Yeah, they evolved on it. They basically decided to if anything, you have to give Dark Horse credit for expanding the Star Wars universe in many respects.
Absolutely.
And all these other ones, Aliens, all these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Which would only, later on, just give so much more content to writers doing movies and stuff like that.
In fact, you mentioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I think they have like season 9, season 10, season 11, but in comic book form, containing the story
Same
there.
Same thing with Firefly. When the pilot, Wash, died in the movie. Spoilers. Zoe, which was his wife, it was revealed in the comics that she was pregnant with his child.
Oh, shit.
So that's going to be something later down the line that they're going to, mm-hmm. integrate into the stories as they're still continuing to build upon this world. And of course, the greatest part about these is, like, oftentimes the creators of the movie or the show will give input to the writers or to Dark Horse themselves. Dark Horse will then contract out writers to write the stories using that blueprint. So they're still following the basic concepts of what the original creator wanted, which is very cool.
And they made sure that quality was maintained.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something you can't knock Dark Horse for. A lot of these licensed properties were pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they showed respect for the property.
They took it seriously.
Yeah,
for sure,
sometimes, we got the license, let's just, do whatever, because we know we're going to make a certain amount of money. But they respected the material, whatever they got, and made sure that it was handled well and the stories were written well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why you had artists come over to bring their original concepts, such as John Byrne, and he had his title, The Next Men.
Right. So weird that he would call them the Next Men after doing that long run on the
X-Men. Interesting.
I remember buying that first issue and then not really reading it and then seeing that the series went on for a while.
Oh, yeah. It went on so long that they premiered a very popular character, I believe, in Next Men, like in a Next Men miniseries or something. Am I correct?
I think it was Next Men 21, and I believe that character was...
Hellboy.
Yeah.
Yes, created by Mike Mignola, the story of a demonic paranormal investigator.
Oh man, Hellboy, Jesus Christ. Full disclosure, first off. So right now, in our time, where you're listening to it in your time, back there. We're here in our time, our time right here. And we're all Goonies. But we were at a recent comic book day, free comic book day, Donald and I, and I saw up on the wall, X-Men 21 is the first appearance of Hellboy's like original was in a prototype Dime Press number 4 in March 1993, which was at a Comic-Con, I think. So you had to get that. It was black and white.
Yeah.
I'm sure like 10 people have it and they're just sleeping with it.
Yep.
But his first U.S. full color appearance was in X-Men 21. And if you read the book, it's totally shoehorned in. It's just like, hey, here's this guy Hellboy, because we're probably going to write him in a book.
Yeah.
And it's Mignola art, which I love. And it's, I saw it up on the wall. This was a book that I would look at on eBay. I had it at one point, and then the great, exodus of my comics going somewhere else. But I had it at one point, and I was like, I want that book again, because I love Hellboy. And that book has skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
And with, just the popularity of the character, he's a great character, the movies, everything. And I saw it up on the wall, and it was $40. And I said, something is wrong. I said, can I see that book? And I even told him, I'm like, maybe I could talk him down to 35. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm not even going to disrespect this or risk it. I'm going to pay the 40. And I did. And
220s isn't a big deal, brother. Just pay it.
No. And it's in beautiful condition. It's a beautiful book. And literally the next day or 2 days later, yep, they announced that they're doing the Hellboy reboot. And of course, that book just went up again. I was like, oh, thank God.
Yep.
Thank God.
That was very loud. Yeah. I remember texting you. I was like, congratulations on your purchase.
You did some great prospecting.
Yep.
But Hellboy is such a cool character. He's got...
Very unusual.
Very unusual. It took me a while to warm up to him. But Mignola... And his art, too. It actually took me a while to warm up to his art. I remember seeing it in X Factor and reading the X Factor of the 90s and loving it. But going like, this art's kind of different. Like kind of like a Bill Sienkiewicz with like the New Mutants back in the day. But in Hellboy, everything he did just came together. It's this character that just deals with every paranormal, every boogeyman, every monster you could think of in history. And they just put it all into this one book. And if you read it, it's very sparse dialogue. And yet it just shows great writing and great art, and great storytelling of like...
And characterization.
And characterization.
Led to many spinoffs.
Yeah, you have the BPRD, which was the Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense, which had his fellow members, Abe Sapien, Liz Sherman, the Golem, Johann Kraus, the guy who was in the containment suit.
Yeah. Oh, that guy's cool.
Oh, so cool. And honestly, you know what my favorite interpretation, I'm sure there's going to be people that disagree with me. My favorite interpretation of Hellboy outside of the comics, the animated movies.
Mm.
Mm. I felt those movies, which were also voiced by the actors from the movies, Ron Perlman did the voice and Selma Blair. And they, to me, captured, because some of them actually were ripped straight from the comics. They did some short stories straight from the comics into the animated world. It's got this kind of almost like Batman animated series look to it.
Yeah.
But it's got some really dark stories in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love me some Hellboy.
You can still find it. I think it's just on DVD.
Yeah.
And there's two of them.
Yeah, there's like the Sword of Storms, and then there's a vampire one that's really good. I forget what the other one is, but they're really good.
Yeah, I think it was called Hellboy and the Hellions.
It was called Bad Out of Hellboy.
There you go.
And Meatloaf's in it with him.
I would do anything for Hell. Yeah, I would do. Boy. But I won't do that.
And that was in reference to the right hand of Doom, his big fist in his, going somewhere. Yeah.
Fisting. Doom fisting, I think is what they called it. Anyway.
Now, some other creator-owned comics there would be Mike Baron and Steve Rude's Nexus.
Oh, love me some Nexus.
Mm-hmm. Lightning Bolt on the side.
Frank Miller's Sin City and 300.
Oh, funny you should mention Sin City.
Yes,
indeed. I got a quick piece about that. It's a series of neo-noir comics by Frank Miller. The first story originally appeared in Dark Horse Presents 5th Anniversary Special, April 1991.
That's a mouthful.
Which I do have, ladies and gentlemen.
Jesus.
And it continued in Dark Horse Presents number 51 through 62 from May 1991 to June 1992 under the title Sin City, serialized in 13 parts. Several other stories of variable lengths have followed. The intertwining stories with frequently recurring characters take place in Basin City. a film adaptation. You know, that happened, of course. It was co-directed by Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller. In fact, Robert Rodriguez lost his DGA guild.
That's right.
Credibility and his standing in there because he made Frank Miller a co-director, and they were like, he can't do that. He's never directed. And he's like, no, I'm making him.
Yeah, it's union co-director. Rules. He broke union rules.
And I think it's even unspoken too, but people know who obviously were on it. Tarantino helped like direct and write some stuff or something. Like, he was working like on the set pretty frequently.
Sin City had a large series of miniseries, including The Hard Goodbye, A Dame to Kill For, The Big Fat Kill, That Yellow Bastard, Family Values, Booze, Broads, and Bullets, and Hell and Back.
Now, if I recall, the second movie was based on A Dame to Kill For. Am I correct?
Yes. It was a mix. It was like that and That Yellow Bastard.
A Dame to Kill For was released, in 2014, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was the sequel.
I never saw the sequel. Was it good? I loved the first movie.
Ava Green. Yeah. Just watch it for her.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of which, it's kind of funny. Ava Green is in the 300. Was in the 300 sequel Ava as Green, well.
Yep.
Interestingly enough.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about Sin City, you know, just talking about Hellboy. And these characters, Frank Miller, Mike Mignola, they all came from Marvel and DC.
Yes.
And we were talking about creator-owned books. Not only were these creator-owned books, but to me, and I love Frank Miller on Daredevil, I love some of Mignola's Marvel work, but you really get to see these artists and these creators really not only just doing their own characters.
Cut loose
and really do something that's... Because how much, like, noir was in those Frank Miller Daredevil? Like, totally. Like, the lighting and every the way the art looked. And, like, now he gets to do this full-blown noir book. And then Mike Mignola with this horror stuff. Obviously, he had a love of horror and a love of folk tales and fantasy and all that. And it's just... It's so cool to see these artists... Yeah, get to just go there in their world, cut loose, and look at how much shit came from
it. I'm reminded of the Queen song, I Want to Break Free.
Yeah. Mm.
I think that's fits perfect with these guys.
And that's just what you saw with Mike Mignola and Guillermo del Toro when they came together for the Hellboy movies.
Not so copacetic right now, but yeah.
But yes.
Oh my God, man.
But yes, but just back then. Yes.
Well, Mignola, I would define him as salty.
Yeah.
Unless he's a little salty.
You can get that from him. Yeah, just from, even from an interview.
Yeah. So, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, I mean, he's nice enough. He's a little salty.
I'll show you how jaded LA I am. I love Mignola's work.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, setting up to sign something at, like, a movie theater. Randomly. It was, like, maybe after, like, Hellboy 2 came out. And I'm looking and I'm with my wife and, like, I'm just like, oh. And he was, like, just setting up. Totally could have went over and been like, hey, man, how's it going? But I kind of knew that reputation. I kind of saw him setting up, and he looked like very serious. And I was like, oh, hey, there's Mike Mignola. She's like, who's that? I'm like, oh, the guy who created Hellboy. All right, so let's go to dinner. I was just like, that's how jaded I am. I don't really need to go sit there and talk to him. Because I always, not even jaded, just also just, like, reality of, like, he probably is just like, I just want to set this shit up, sign some things, get the fuck out of here.
But how do you know? You might be unique. He might have given you a hug. If you showed how much you love Hellboy, he might have given
I think he sent me, he saw me walk away and said, man, that kid just kind of knew. He knew I wanted to be left alone. One day that guy's going to be at a comic shop and I'm going to give him a gift. He's going to see Next Men number 21 up on the wall and he's going to get it for a great price.
Because I willed it.
I met Mike Mignola at Comic-Con.
Oh yeah?
A few years back. It was around the time, I think it was around the time of Hellboy 2. In fact, I got into some random line because at Comic-Con in San Diego, you could just get in random lines. You're like, what's the line for? And the guy in front of you is like, I don't know.
To suck Hugh Jackman's cock.
Really? I guess. Do you get an autograph?
he'll spray one on your chest. Oh, great. Yeah, so I got in this random line. And it just so happens that there was only like two other people in front of me. And we were at this like rope thing. And they let us through. And it was Mike Mignola, and he was there signing these huge Hellboy 2 posters.
Oh, wow.
And no one was there. And so I just walked up to him. I was like, hey, can I get one of them posters with your autograph? And he's like, yeah. All right. Grabs the poster.
Somebody wants one.
He's like, here you go, kid. I was like, thank you. I'm probably the same age as you.
I'm 28. That was the same year that I got the Dave Gibbons doodles of a certain character, well, of Watchmen.
You have the better memory. I don't know.
Yeah, because Hellboy 2 came out in 08.
Yeah, it came out the year I was fired from ArcLight.
Really? See, Kevin would know. Kevin's the master of years. I'll be like, hey, Kevin, today's January 12th. He's like, oh, that's 30 years that Buckaroo Banzai came out.
And you're like, what? What
the fuck?
Yeah.
Indeed.
You're like, actually, it was 17 years.
But another creator-owned comic there would be Mr. Eric Powell's The Goon.
Once again, one of my... God, I love... I can't say enough good things about The Goon. And once again, another... I don't really know where Eric Powell came from before this, but God, he has a love for this. It's like his own... He's like he created his own genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's like circus freak, 50s, like... almost a rockabilly feel to it, zombies, and just like straight up palookas. The goon is a straight up palooka. He is just a big barrel chested tough guy who doesn't really have superpowers, but yet can kick anything's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his pal Frankie, who always is trying to stab people in the eye. I love Frankie. I in fact, I've been wanting to get a tattoo of the goon and Frankie for a while, and I think that's coming up. But started with Avatar Press, then Albatross Exploding Funny Books, where he literally, Eric Powell, let his contract run out because he was just like, I don't want to work with these people anymore. Got picked up by Dark Horse, and the rest is history. The Goon, I believe the series actually just ended, and it's so, and he, and Eric Powell does the art and the writing for it. He has so much fun with the character and the genre. It's so, and the art, Eric Powell's art is amazing. It's this mix of like cartoony, fine art. It's like beautiful yeah. and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, and in fact, am I incorrect, or did he not do a cover of Bizarro, or do a drawing of Bizarro at one point?
He might if he's crossed over to like DC and Marvel and done like
I believe artistic that's correct, stuff. I believe.
Yeah, like, and that was beautiful.
I know he did the covers to that, it was like a Batman Arkham Unhinged or something like that. It was like a mini series, and he did these really great...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about. It was like the creation of that character called the Whale or the Shark, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, the White Shark or whatever.
Yeah. Yep. I remember those covers.
He did the covers to those.
They were awesome.
They're great.
The Demon, I think, was on there at one mm-hmm. point on one of the covers. Yeah.
Yeah. The Goon is just awesome. I can't even... hope enough for this. I think it'll come to fruition, especially with everything being rated R now, but they've been talking David Fincher, of all people, is a big fan of The Goon. David Fincher, the director of Seven, Zodiac, just one of our greatest directors of
Alien 3.
Alien 3. He, Seven, he... just wanted to go back to a good one. David Fincher... was working with Eric Powell on doing an animated movie of The Goon. And now if you read The Goon, you can't do a PG or PG-13. It's got to be rated R because there's like sex and violence and everything. And they made a teaser trailer and they had, was it Paul Giamatti did the voice of Frankie and who's the guy that does Lex Luthor? The voice of Lex Luthor, big character actor.
Oh.
Clancy Brown?
Yes, thank
Clancy
you.
Brown. Did The Goon, and never were two voices more perfect for these characters. And the trailer, you could find it somewhere. Just look for like The Goon
yeah,
teaser trailer.
It was like
trailer.
A Kickstarter or something,
yeah,
wasn't it?
He did a Kickstarter. I think he earned enough money to get some part of it done.
Mm-hmm.
He's still working. It's still in the process. But especially, I think probably it's like a fine wine. Like it's probably best that it's taken this long because with all the rated R movies coming out now, the rated R like Deadpool, rated R Wolverine, all that stuff. I think. The time for this movie is now, and I think it'll kick ass. It's got zombies, which everybody loves from Walking Dead, and then it's got this 50s noir feel to it, and then it's just got ridiculous like humor a la Deadpool. I think for sure this thing would be a hit. And if you haven't read The Goon, it's all on trade paperbacks. Go read it. It's so good.
All right. Now, in 1992, Dark Horse decided to form a film television wing. Dark Horse Entertainment.
Yep.
And they ended up producing many famous films that some people don't even know was affiliated with Dark Horse. First, you had the film from 1994, The Mask.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're part of production for that. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, they had one before that, too. 1992, Dr. Giggles.
Oh, yes, Dr.
Holy
Giggles.
Holy shit, Dr. Giggles. Giggles.
Yep.
That's right.
And also for you Jean-Claude Van Damme fans out there, Time Cop.
One of his best, Time Cop. Well, right after that, in 95, there was Tank Girl.
Tank Girl.
That's right.
The 96. 96 was one of the best, guys. Pamela Lee Anderson, or Pamela Anderson.
Oh, the thing in the boat with Tommy Lee.
No. She played a motorcycling lady brawler called Barb Wire.
Barb Wire, who recently had a comic book again, surprisingly. 1999, then, 3 years later, what was their next one? My favorite, my personal favorite out of the bunch, Mystery Men.
Oh, yes.
That is very, a sleeper hit. Yeah.
Very underrated
film.
That's
got a big cult following, too. Yeah, I think.
It should. It's great. 99 also brought us Virus. 2000 was something I've never heard of, G-Men from Hell. 2003 came American Splendor.
Is that with Paul Giamatti?
Yes.
Yes, see, can't go wrong there.
Yeah, no. 2004, Alien vs. Predator, of course. We just talked about that. 2004 also brought us Hellboy. And then later on, its subsequent sequel, Hellboy 2. Same thing a year later with Sin City, and then years later, Sin City 2. Mask sequel came out in 05, although we don't claim it.
Never happened.
2006 was the Hellboy animated movies. 2007 was 300.
Sorry,
yeah,
not a fan.
2013 was
Are you jealous of because those men are in shape? Is that's your problem, sir?
Those are like, I'm not saying that they weren't in crazy shape, but that was like some digital six packs. They all had like 24 packs.
Would you tell Gerard Butler to his face that he didn't earn his body?
Yes. Yes, I would. Oof. Because he'd probably be too drunk or hide to swing at me.
Well, I don't know. Sean Bean got stabbed and then went back in and finished his drink.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
God, 300 was like the best gay porno I've ever seen. And I'm not into gay porn, but 300 was great.
They don't mess around.
Yeah.
RIPD was in 2013. The Legend of Tarzan was last year. And upcoming, Beasts of Burden and Emily the Strange.
They're doing Beasts of Burden?
Yeah. The Beasts of Burden, for those that don't know, is basically The Incredible Journey, which is all about pets. But they fight paranormal, basically, things that happen.
No, Donald, so
it's
you
kind
missed,
of interesting.
Yeah, no,
Donald,
it's a cool
you missed a project or a particular.
Oh, I did. What one?
How could you forget this? My Name Is Bruce, 2007. They produced that, starring Bruce Campbell.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't a comic book that they turned into a movie.
But still,
that's what I'm talking.
It's still
about.
A notable.
Was it like a documentary?
Well, of course, no. Oh, no. It's actually a very, very good film. Anybody
really?
That hasn't seen it should. Yes, I highly recommend it. It's Bruce Campbell as himself.
Oh, it's like a meta thing.
Yeah, it was like, because Bruce Campbell, he lives in Portland, or outside of Portland. He lives in Oregon. And
not too far from Dark Horse, kind
right.
of headquarters.
So,
I'm moving to Washington, so maybe I'll become best friends with Bruce Campbell.
Oh my God. I'll visit you every weekend if that's the case.
Well, if not, at least Mike Richardson.
Somebody.
No. Bruce or die.
I'll get into grunge.
Okay. Play guitar. But anyway, that's Yes, My Name Is Bruce. It's really cool. I highly recommend you check it out. Definitely.
Excellent. Now, one of the recent creator-owned titles that have been launched is called Brian Woods' The Massive. It's like an ecological disaster thriller. I thought that was a very interesting book.
Isn't that the one where he basically there's an island of trash and he claims it as his own?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he says it's like his own country.
That's kind of cool. I like that. That's a good idea.
It's a very great idea, actually.
You also have the Umbrella Academy.
Oh, yes. The Umbrella Academy. That's another notable creator-owned. There's, besides Frank Miller's Sin City and Frank Miller's 300 and Magnolia's Hellboy, there was Gerard Way's Umbrella Academy. And
who is the... He's like the singer of My Chemical Romance.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then there was also Stan Sakai's Usagi Yojimbo. And for those that don't know who Usagi Yojimbo is, you're obviously not a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
Because that's how I recognized him. In the late 80s, early 90s, he appeared in the cartoons.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in he actually was a figure. I had him. He was a figure that came with the Ninja Turtles.
I know the character. I didn't know he was in... Okay.
Yep. He was created, of course, by Stan Sakai. It is set primarily at the beginning of the Edo period of Japanese history and features anthropomorphic animals replacing humans. The main character is a rabbit ronin.
A rabbit
Miyamoto
ronin.
Usagi, whom Sakai based partially on the famous swordsman Miyamoto Musashi. Usagi wanders the land occasionally selling his services as a bodyguard. So basically, it's this kind of cool Ronin rabbit that encounters all these other characters and stuff and set in that time period. And it's just he's got some really cool stories. In fact, it was 2015. I was at Comic-Con. I go a lot, guys. I'm sorry. 2015, I was at San Diego Comic-Con. And we were in Hall H. And it was kind of boring. Like, the stuff that they were playing. They were playing trailers or something, and I didn't care. And I just needed to get up to stretch my legs. So I got up. I got a bathroom pass. And I said, you know what? I'm going to use the bathroom, clear the back of the hall.
Right.
So I went onto the floor where they have all the booths and stuff. And I walked past Stan Sakai, just sitting there by himself. No one there with him.
In a full gi.
He had his Ronin, he had his sword and everything. He was dressed like a Ronin guy, and it was very interesting. No, he was just sitting there, just this cool dude, just chilling. And I walked up to him, and I was like, I will take one of these series, collected volumes, if you'll autograph it. And I said, maybe do a little sketch for me. And he said, yeah, okay. And I said, well, which one do you recommend? And he picked one out for me, and then he wrote a personalized message to me.
That's cool.
And then he drew a little Usagi Yojimbo, a little rabbit.
That's awesome.
Inside cool. for me. So you never know who you're going to run into at Comic-Con, which is always great. And you always get these little personal moments, which when those stop happening, I'll probably stop going.
I just love a creator picking out the book that he wants you. I mean, like, how cool is that? Like, if I was going to have you read one of these, I want you to read this one. Oh, and then, by the way, I'll do all this other cool shit. But also, just, like, he wanted you to read that story.
Right.
Like, fucking creator.
I believe he gave me some candy and gas money.
What?
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen.
Okay.
No. Really?
But we had beers later.
And he ordered you a pizza.
Yeah.
He said, you know what?
With the beers.
You need a full cheese pizza to yourself.
With garlic.
Yeah.
Fresh garlic. It's great.
With the toppings I choose. Like,
all right. It's all anchovies.
Too much.
Now, Dark Horse also was smart enough to do crossover books with some other companies, such as DC. They had Batman versus Predator.
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd. Superman, Aliens, Joker, and Mask, even.
Did the Joker and the Mask, really?
Man, indeed. I don't remember that one.
Yes.
That sounds cool.
It does sound cool.
Buy that for me.
I will.
Buy it for me.
And, of course, you know, Mr. Mike Richardson, he understood that he needed to have international alliances as well, so he made sure that he had a manga company, or should I say a manga program within Dark Horse.
So he got the Yakuza. And
sure,
started working with them. No, he doesn't work with the Yakuza.
Yes, he brought titles over, you know, such as Akira, Astro Boy, Ghost in the Shell, Blade of the Immortal.
Now, didn't Frank Miller do one too? Rusty, I think, or something, and something, the Boy Robot, or
yeah. That sounds. Was it Miller though?
Yeah, I thought it was Miller that wrote that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Miller also, speaking of Samurai, wasn't Ronin Dark Horse? Was that Dark Horse or no?
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I don't have that.
That was another series he... I know he...
Well, you look it up, you son of a bitch.
I'm going to look it up while you guys are talking.
Anyway.
Yeah. But yes.
Tell us more.
But yes, Dark Horse, you know, like I said before, Dark Horse had...
Nope, that was DC Comics. Fuck all y'all. Edit that shit out. That is my two cents on that one.
Go on.
Okay, last one I had was Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Oh, yes, they did the Godzilla. They brought him back out recently because of the movie popularity.
What a smart motherfucker, though, to, like, just, like, to have the foresight to be like, okay, these guys have all these characters, Marvel, DC have all these guys already. Nobody's doing this. Nobody's doing that. People love those movies. Let's do a comic book of that.
Richardson did was he was filling niches that the big two didn't care to fill.
Brilliant. And what other ones are now picking up, like IDW?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. IDW it owes its existence to Dark Horse.
Not only does it owe its existence, but it sells more. It's got a larger market share now than Dark Horse.
You're kidding.
No. IDW is huge now. They've got properties. They've got Ninja Turtles.
That's true. Transformers.
They've got Transformers. They've got My Little Pony.
G.I. Joe, I think, right?
They've got G.I. Joe, I believe. They've got Gem and the Holograms. They've got, like, Thundercats, I think, even now.
Yeah. He-Man. I think they got He-Man.
Oh, He-Man's DC right now.
Is it DC?
Okay. Yeah, believe it or not. Because DC actually was doing He-Man versus the Justice League. I think they did that like that run, which I thought was interesting.
Was it like a Power Rangers was Justice League 2 or something?
Yep,
like that
was recent. Yeah, I think it's still.
But yeah, but look at that. That's like DC and these people jumping on the bandwagon years later.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So with Dark Horse, I mean, they've done a lot. They were very instrumental in bringing stories from popular movies and television and continuing that story further. In fact, one could say that perhaps a Josh Whedon was listening to this podcast and was like, you know, I want to see what these guys' opinions are on possibly doing more with Firefly. And if they thought it would be cool for me to use some of the stories from Dark Horse Comics that have been created. And Josh, I give my approval. You're allowed to do it.
You are allowed, Mr. Whedon.
Yes, so if you thought that was an issue, it's not. Go for it, sir.
Well, it's literally like pre-written stories already there. I mean, it's like you can't... It's a win-win situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody's a fan. It's like a huge built-in fan base that you're using and you're cashing in on. Another thing that Dark Horse did for a little bit in the 90s, they tried to create their own universe. They had Will to Power. Right. Motorhead, I think, was one. Barbed Wire and a few others.
Ghost.
Right. Ghost was a big one.
Yeah, that's essentially a super...
X, too. Wasn't there the X guy?
Yes, X.
Yep, X. Yeah, they had this whole run of this, like, whole...
Captain Midnight, too? Or was that outside this particular run?
Captain Midnight was more recent. More recent. That was an original creation. I think Captain Midnight was from, like, the 40s or 50s. Yes, from the
40s. Another one we was in the middle of this history is, was it Matt Wagner's Grendel, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Grendel was a really cool book. And definitely, like... Another very in-depth character design book.
Yep.
Like a rich history that went years into the future and the past and everything. No, Grendel had such a cool look to me.
And also some other titles, you know, just to list off that I haven't mentioned. Zombie World, Lady Killer, Spy Boy, Witch Finder.
Brain Boy was another one. And he was an older character too, from like the 40s or 50s.
The Atomic Legion.
Yeah, just all kinds of cool stuff. So, Dark Horse, you know, we salute you. We appreciate what you've done. And we think you should listen to The Real Short Box.
Yeah, get on it. We just praised you for like a half an hour.
And if we ever go on the road, we're going to pay a visit to your headquarters in Milwaukee, Oregon.
Milwaukee,
Oregon? Really?
Yes, sir.
Interesting.
Spelt a little bit differently from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but...
You know what? I prefer it.
40 L's.
I prefer it.
Yeah. So, with that... Is that our history of Dark Horse?
Yes, that's our history of Dark Horse. You know, 31 years of very great history, innovative entertainment.
I would say, yeah, innovative is the word to use for them.
Yep.
As always, as we say, kneel before us, but also subscribe to us on iTunes, Instagram. We've got beautiful pictures and all kinds of hues and fonts.
It's true.
YouTube, for those people who you know, they just say, I don't get the whole podcast thing.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of
our podcasts are on YouTube, not to mention special little video things we shoot, little funny things, little cool things, going
skits
to cons
and stuff. Yeah, going to conventions and things, lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, so please and tell your friends.
Subscribe
to everything. Facebook, we got a Facebook page. We put the pods up on there. Twitter. We put them up on there, and we also have a SmackDown Sundays where we give you a kind of a, hey, who's going to win this fight, as we do on our SmackDowns that you've listened to. And with that, if you're around the corner, maybe come stop by so we can see you.